Welcome to Danger Splosion.
Bitch, gotta keep it healthy. Wash your hands, toes, and booty hole before you touch me. Pussy tight, stuck up and bougie. Dripping like a three-piece side in a biscuit. Oh shit, bitch, trying to get the clit lit and the click lit. So it's on like a flip switch. If I quit dick, I won't cry, I won't miss it. Niggas is so boring like a chore and I'ma miss it. Baby, be my slut, suck me up immediately. I see you been eating all your vegetables for me. You starting to taste like my favorite smoothie. I need that dick swinging off a tree. And my weave leave-in conditioner. Do as I please, don't need no signature. Keep up with me, do you have the stamina? Look like anime and fuck like anima.
Freak bitch, do you have the stamina? Freak bitch.
Here, nasty trick.
On today's episode, we've got a very special guest. Aubrey, good to have you. Good to have you with us. Do you want to say a quick hello to everybody?
I'm very happy to be here.
Good to have you. Good to have you. And Brent, as always, if you want to say hello to your adoring fans. Everyone really just listens for Brent, so.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, is that right? Wow, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Hello, adoring fans.
Hello, but we have, Aubrey wanted to bring you on for a couple reasons. I met you on Twitter, and this is actually my first time speaking to you in person. It's always kind of weird when I feel like I know somebody or have an idea of somebody from Twitter, and then we meet, or not me, but, you know, talk in real life over Skype or whatever, and it's always...
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh, I'm actually talking to this person, which it doesn't feel all that different, I guess, from messaging.
So you're just feeling really disappointed right now, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. but I got to know you through, because I tend to, on Twitter, like, if I see somebody post something that's pretty funny, you know, and I'll go, like, look, and they'll usually have a couple things I think are pretty funny. I'm like, oh, I'll follow that person, you know? So that's how I first got to know you. And you were, at that time, under that Twitter account, I think you might have had to change it recently, but you were going by, yeah, which we could talk about that, too. But you were going by Pesky Prostitute, right? Was that the handle?
Yeah, Pesky Prostitute, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I wanted to bring you on, A, because you're hilarious, and that's you know, why I started following you initially. But also, your line of work and being a prostitute and sex work, I thought the way you talk about it and you're so open with it and candid with it, I thought it was interesting. I thought it'd be good for people to just kind of hear you talk about that and kind of normalize it, because I think people have different, you know, maybe probably a lot of misconceptions in their head of like what that is and what that entails. So that was, which you could probably speak to that more than I can. But I thought that'd be another, you know, an interesting angle, you know, on an aspect of society that you could provide that a lot of people wouldn't be familiar with. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, off the bat, how's that? How did you get into that? How'd you start doing that?
I started, in sex work way back when I was 21, I was in university.
Mm-hmm.
And I just needed something that was, I was also a single parent to a toddler, so I needed something that was few hours for decent money,
mm-hmm.
and that wasn't going to affect my scholarships or student loans or anything like that. So, I actually, answered a newspaper ad, like a print newspaper ad.
Really? It was just like prostitutes here. Wanted on
it was, yeah, this was more than a couple of years ago.
Right.
This is about 14 years ago. But yeah, so it was like an escort agency, like a brothel type setting.
Okay.
Good thing. And I had no clue what I was doing.
Right.
Like zero idea. The only insight into sex work that I had was through media, like what you see on TV and movies, which is very seldomly anything remotely resembling reality. So
right.
It was interesting. Like I had this idea in my mind of like this call girl and you go on some dates and maybe there's some sex at the end, but it was very kind of, I had no idea what I was getting into, and but that kind of appealed to me too. I'm a little bit of a thrill seeker, I think, in my life. I don't like to be bored, so I'm pretty adventurous.
Right. So how was your experience at first? Were you, you know, first did, was it something you had to like kind of acclimate to and you and figure out like, okay, I think this is for me, or were you like, no, this seems like something like, you know, that I could do that's good for me.
Right. No, it was, I loved it right away. Like, it was very exciting to me right away. But it was also very daunting to me right away. And I felt very clueless, but I was also, I had this idea in my head for whatever reason, being young and dumb, that I didn't want anybody that I was working with or working for to know how out of my element or how clueless I was going in.
Right.
So instead of, you know, benefiting from their experience and wisdom, I just kind of like
faked it fake till it, I made right. it. Right. Like most people at most jobs. Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting to say the least. Yeah. It was interesting. I'm completely different now in my work now. I haven't been in sex work the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Long hiatus in between. I worked in software and I did massage therapy. So I've had sort of other careers, but I came back to it a few years ago and fell in love with it. And I've been working independently since returning to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a completely different experience because I'm 35 now. So I've got years of therapy under my belt. So there's that too. But just even sex work itself it's really changed me a lot in really great ways. Like, I've become a more assured, confident, and assertive person because you kind of have to be. You really have to be. And I wasn't before. And that completely made it a different experience than what it is now. But, yeah,
right.
I'm very in love with it now. I love my work.
Nice. That's all. And how many people could say that? You know, a lot of people can't say that they love their job.
Not a lot that I talk to.
Yeah, most people cannot. But.
Right.
But that's and that you kind of touched on something I want to ask about, because I think a lot of people do have this this image of things you've seen in movie or on TV, or like when I was a kid, I, you know, the TV show on HBO, Pimps Up, Hose Down. You know, I don't know if you guys remember that show from HBO.
I'm not familiar with
You're not familiar with that. It's probably better. It's, yeah.
The guy who directed it is my name.
That's right. It would be yeah
I've seen that. The guy's name is Brent Owens.
Who directed that show?
That's true. I mean, as a kid, I watched it and like it freaked me out. Right. So I was like 12, maybe 11. And then it was like,
What was this on?
HBO.
HBO, I think.
Oh, HBO, okay.
Yeah, it was like a late
now
night.
I was a Canadian kid. I wasn't exposed to this shit.
No, see.
What is it? Pimps Up, Hose Down?
That's the name of the show. It was like one of those HBO docuseries, like Real Sex or I don't know, whatever. They had a bunch of them.
Yeah.
but so, you know, you can't, like, you have certain connotations the way it's portrayed in movies and things like that.
Yeah.
And then there was one point, maybe 10, 11 years ago, somebody I worked with at a progressive nonprofit organization, you know, because I was already on board with drug decriminalization, and that made sense, and a lot of like very progressive ideas, and I just had never questioned or even thought about prostitution being legal. I was just always like, oh, it's illegal, and that's a good thing, and it's illegal, you know. And then somebody I work with there was like, no, it should be decriminalized. It shouldn't be illegal. It should be legal and regular and blah. And he, like, everything he said made total sense, and I was like, holy fuck it, yeah, of course, yeah, like why. You know what I mean? Why did I have this like unchecked assumption that, you know, but so anyway, so that kind of brings me to my question is, I'm curious if the, you know, the fact that you're independent now and not working with an escort agency or something, I'm wondering if you have any perspective on whether the advent of the internet and the ability maybe to be more independent, if it's maybe a better, like more beneficial, more comfortable line of work now than maybe it was like 20, 30 plus years ago. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. 100%. Like, there's still escort agencies, and like, it's really weird here in Canada. The legality is really convoluted. So it's decriminalized for providers. So the sex workers don't face prosecution for it. I can't see. Oh, there you are.
I think Brent dropped his phone for a moment. It's fine. His ceiling is really nice.
So
we don't
face prosecution, but it's still illegal for the clients.
Okay.
Which makes it interesting for things like trying to screen your clients and stuff. There's a little more reticence and hesitation on their parts because it's illegal for them, right?
Right.
It's decriminalized for the providers, but that was done actually under a conservative government a number of years ago. And it was with the idea that sex workers are victims.
Right.
Which is a really problematic perspective. But I mean, I'm pretty happy that it's decriminalized for me here compared to what, my comrades in the U.S. go through. It's ridiculous and terrible over there. And like the sting operations are just nonstop in the U.S. And it's like all of these funds being spent to try and like prevent consensual adult women from providing a service for pay,
right,
to consensual adult male. Like, it's ridiculous.
Right.
And all of this money goes into these sting operations. And then there's horrid, horrid, horrid abuses by police, mm-hmm, of the power that they have in regulating sex work over there. So I'm very grateful that it is decriminalized here, but it needs to be fully decriminalized so that we can properly screen our clients and so that there's a little more safety back and forth. But myself and pretty much most sex workers that I've known, we advocate for full decriminalization over like a legalization regulation kind of approach, or that like Swedish model, mm-hmm, or like the Nordic model where you see in like the Netherlands,
mm-hmm,
where it's legalized and it's highly regulated, because then you still find there's a lot of abuses, especially of the more marginalized of sex workers, so the women of color or the trans women, they face a lot of abuses, especially under those models where the police still have that sort of power within it.
Right.
So
because it's so heavily regulated,
it's just the decriminalization so that we can regulate ourselves the way we always have and protect ourselves the way we know best how to, and not face persecution from police in,
right,
with it. I think I got totally sidetracked there, though, because
sound great.
No.
I've got a question then. What's the difference then? Yeah, from Canada and then like Las Vegas. Like, is Las Vegas like a weird, like? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So Vegas is it's Nevada, right?
Yeah.
And it's still not fully decriminalized statewide. Like, it's not like independents are decriminalized there,
mm-hmm,
or legalized there. It's only like the registered brothels, like the Bunny Ranch.
Okay. So it's like a liquor license or something, almost. Like, not quite, but you have to like apply.
Yeah,
for...
and it just completely erodes the autonomy of sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What you want is for sex workers to be independent, because there's a conflict of interest when somebody stands to make money off of you saying yes to things you want to say no to.
Right.
You know, it's pimping, right?
Right.
It's pimping. And there it's essentially like, it becomes like pimping by the state in a way.
Right, right. When I think really we could apply this to all work in every industry. You know, something that I think Brent Owens of HBO was trying to get across was that, you know, in this kind of capitalist system, they're always trying to push for pimps up, hoes down, you know, trying to keep the workers, the proletariat down, you know.
Right.
I didn't get that message when I watched it at 11.
Yeah.
When I was 11 years old.
No, you didn't get the deeper meanings of.
I was taking notes. Yes.
Sorry, it's such a ridiculous goddamn show. Sorry.
I'm going to have to YouTube this shit after we're done here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I apologize, and I assume that's probably a derogatory term that I would not use outside of the title of that show.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm curious, do you have any like interesting stories or experiences that you've had, you know, that you want to share or that people might be interested in hearing?
I mean, like, I've had some interesting, like, fetishes, I guess, if that's interesting. Like, back in the day, I used to have a balloon fetish client, which was a real hoot.
That's interesting. So how did that work? Like, did you have to make balloon animals, or...
No, I don't have those skills. But
can I guess? Yes. Can I guess what it is?
Sure. Yeah. I want to hear what you
think. This is going to be a funny answer. I'm not trying to be funny.
I hope you can guess it.
Is it like the sound, like the tensiony sound, like when you rub a balloon, like that noise? Is it something like that?
It is for some people. So, like, balloon fetishism is a thing, and there's, like, a myriad of ways that presents for people. But, so, I have heard of that, but no, that wasn't what it was for this client. For this client, it was me riding him while blowing up a balloon really, really big. And then when he was, like, ready to come, he would let me know. And then I was supposed to let it go so that it would fly around the room and do the, like...
Like...
Awesome!
That's...
around the room while he did. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's not what I expected. I thought it was
going to... No.
That's no. I don't think you could have guessed that in any number of tries.
No, it was a lot of fun. Like I had so much fun with it. It's obviously it's not my sexual fetish, and it did nothing for me personally sexually. But I have a lot of fun when it's like it's not something that grosses me out, and I can fit it within my boundaries. Then I have a lot of fun exploring with people. So it was always nice to have things that are just different from what you're used to. Right? He was great too. He always tipped well, and he'd like buy me lingerie, and yeah.
Nice.
Stay on the low and get it everywhere that we go. Let me do my thing. New gators on my feet, rolling up and down the streets. Let me do my thing. Keep it on the low. We get it everywhere that we go. Let me do my thing. Greetings, nebulons. It is I, says me. You are now ordered to do your thing. Oh no! Your thing is your thing. Only you can do you. So do it, do it, do it, do it. Do my thing. Yeah, I'ma do my thing. Let me do my thing. Stay on the low and get it everywhere that we go. Let me do my thing. New gators on my feet.
Yeah, what are your other interests outside of your work? Do you spend your time doing? Are you active in any sort of like political activism around that? Like directly involved with any of it?
No.
No.
Around sex work? Not currently, no. I have been in the past.
Right. Okay. I was just curious I'm always, you know, anybody who does listen to anything you want to plug or even your Twitter handle to anyone who might be interested in following you, you know, or any organizations you do support, you know, I'm always want to plug that to people listening who may be interested. So
there are the SWAP organizations, which is SWOP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sex worker. It's run by sex workers for sex workers. They do like all kinds of support for sex workers. So that's always a good organization to donate to. But no, I'm not currently doing any advocacy or anything like that around sex work. My Twitter handle, I don't even remember what my new one is.
Right.
Aubrey Pesky or Pesky Aubrey. And Aubrey is spelled A-U-B-R-I-E, like right. The cheese.
Right, because recently yours was taken away. You were deactivated, and so if you want to talk about that at all, permanently suspended, which is ridiculous. But yeah, I don't know if you want to talk unjust. About that at all.
I had my account, which I built over 2 years, and I was over 47,000 followers on there, and there are some people who don't like me. And they organized and mass reported me as spam and like artificially influencing the Twitter algorithms. And so just the volume of reports triggered an automatic suspension. And then after that, like I appealed and it was just denied. They're just like, no, you're spam. You're gone forever. So, I'm technically not supposed to be on Twitter at all, right. And I'm on this new account. I'm trying not to be too attached to the account because I had my heart broken when I lost the last one, and I feel like I'm just sitting on a time bomb and I'm waiting for it to be taken out. So,
right.
Yeah.
Oh man. So do you just like when that happens? Are you just not allowed to look at like your previous threads? I'm pretty new to Twitter myself. Sorry.
Right,
like you just never see that again. It's just gone.
I'm just gone. It's just gone. Yeah, it was 2 years of like, I produced a lot of content on there. I did some fundraising on there for myself.
Blowing up balloons.
At the beginning of the pandemic, I did some fundraising, and then I also did fundraising for the Black Lives Matter movement. I raised over $13,000. With offering topless pictures to people who donated to Black Lives Matter organizations. And I got messages like literally every day I would have messages from people just talking about how I had opened their mind or just made them think differently about sex work just from getting to know me through my account and realizing that. Because what I do is I share about myself and I share about my work. And then I just also tell really ridiculous jokes and really terrible puns. But I think
that's how I got to know you as part of like joke Twitter, comedy Twitter.
Right.
Was like,
so I actually feel like I created a real bridge between sex worker Twitter and joke Twitter, because I started to see around some of the accounts that I retweet a lot, I would start to see the sex workers who were only part of sex worker Twitter starting to comment on and share all these joke account tweets from my things. And I feel like I really did create this sort of bridge between the two little niches of Twitter. So that was kind of cool too. But yeah, you had a question? Did you say you had a question?
Okay. The word about, I love the way Canadians say it. But my question is,
I don't think we actually say it like that.
You say a boot, right? Or like, but is that a regional? What? What do you say?
I definitely do not.
Say about.
About.
No. You said a boot earlier. I know you did.
It was a little different. We've had a couple Canadians on recently, and there's just a slight variation. It's not like a strong a boo, but it's a little.
Well, I've always thought the stereotype was that we did, and then certain, like, because, I mean, it's the same as the U.S. There's regional accents, right?
Right.
This was my question.
I'm Southwestern Ontario. We border with New York, so we're not the most heavily accented here. Like I'm close to Toronto, so it's not a strong accent, but sort of certain parts of Alberta probably sound like that. Even rural, actually, Ontario kind of sounds like that. Like Letterkenny. I don't know if you know that show.
It sounds familiar. I've heard of it. Yeah.
I've seen the advertising. Okay.
Well, first of all, you both have to fucking watch Letterkenny. Like, you're missing out.
Okay, it's a good recommendation.
Actually, it's based on and filmed, like, 45 minutes from me.
Nice.
In rural Ontario. So there you're going to hear the real Canadian accent on that show. But, yeah, I don't think that I generally – I don't know. Do I sound Canadian?
There was a couple times I heard it. It's not a big deal. There were a couple sentences
where you said about like a few times, like every sentence. I was like, that's great.
But is it Toronto? I know there are. I think probably for tax reasons, but there are a couple places. I think it's Toronto where Hollywood like films a lot of stuff in Toronto. Do you know about that all? Yeah. Is it Toronto? Okay. Oh.
So where does everybody speak French at then?
Quebec.
Oh, sorry. Quebec.
That's cool. All right. There is French. Like French is part of our curriculum in elementary school, and so it's mandatory up through grade 8. And then there's one French credit. You have to take one French course in high school. Mandatory. People do French immersion where their entire education is in French. That's an option.
Nice.
But it's mandatory to do a French class all through school from grade 1 through grade 8 and then one in high school. So we have that. And then all of our products have to have everything printed in French and English throughout Canada. So we learn a lot from cereal boxes. You know,
nice.
Cereal box in the morning.
Nice. Like we've got a lot of Spanish stuff in certain areas. I was at the, I had a layover at the Detroit airport one time in Detroit, Michigan, and everything was in English and then Japanese. Right. And I was like, why? That's so odd. But then I got to thinking about it, and Detroit, especially back in the day, is where, cars were built. There were a lot of automobile manufacturers in Detroit and Michigan. And so you probably, and a lot of those are Japanese companies. So I'd imagine you probably had a lot of Japanese businessmen, right?
So you applied like knowledge and intelligence and came to a logical conclusion.
Like some asshole.
Why would you do that?
No, but it took me, I spent a lot of time in this airport, like looking at these signs, and I was like, why the fuck?
And that makes a lot of sense. It really does.
That's my guess. Yeah. That's my guess.
I would have never gotten there, ever.
Oh, well, I love to see the security footage. It's just like some dude just like looking up.
Sitting on the edge of a fountain looking around. And all the announcements, too. It was in English and then Japanese. Like all the...
Wow.
Yeah. I sat there for a long time like... Why the fuck is everything in Japanese?
Oh, that's so funny.
But that's good. I took 3 years of Spanish in high school, but all 3 years I had the same guy, Pedro, who was from Cuba.
Oh yeah.
And he was really funny. He's like a good dude. But I always felt like he was more interested in like making the students laugh and testing out his material on the students than he was in speaking Spanish. So my Spanish knowledge is still fairly low, but he would always just like, make jokes. And I was one, and this has become a saying like in my house among my children, where he would be like, I mean this from the bottom of my heart, and my heart is black and bloody, you know, and then he'd start laughing. And then he'd always start laughing and be like, I crack myself, you know. That's what my kids, we say that all the time. We're always like, I crack myself.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like that.
Galima. Galima. कालीमा शक्ति दे, बलि चढ़ाओ तेरे आगे, स्वीकार करो।
Have you guys heard of, I came across this recently, a website called Cameo, where you can...
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of this? Where you can go...
Wife got me one.
Oh, really?
It was for my birthday. Sorry, I just had to think of which holiday it was.
Brent's birthday, a national holiday, yeah.
National holiday. Everyone watches in screens. Pimps up, hose down. If you're Canadian, you wouldn't know about this.
We miss all the good shit.
Yes. In America, we watch this movie. No, she's a huge Survivor fan, and which by proxy, I am too. Mm-hmm. And she got me a Survivor player, who's our favorite Survivor player, Tyson. Messaged me, and it was fantastic. It was like very personal, and it was
it like a video message?
Sorry, Corey, explain what Cameo is.
Well, it's...
Yeah, what's Cameo?
I saw this recently, and it's where celebrities of... I don't know where the line is, like what level of celebrity you have to be at, but they can get on this website, and from any...
Needing some extra money, celebrities.
Needing some extra money, celebrities. So there's probably a line you have to be... Level. Right, yeah. There's a line you have to be above, and probably a line that you're below as well, you know? But you could pay anywhere from like, some of them are like $50 and then it goes up to several hundred dollars, maybe $1,000for maybe a 1 or 2 minute video. And I think you can supply them with text
with a script.
Or I guess you could probably just have them like, here's what this is for, kind of go at it. But, it's pretty crazy. Like I've seen some recently, a guy I know has like released a book. And he had some, he had like Andy Dick and Stacey Dash just like read a thing about his book. But yeah, it's just some like random ass celebrities. Melissa Etheridge is on there.
It'd be awesome to pay like David Hasselhoff like $500, like break up with your girlfriend or something. Can you imagine that?
People should
shirtless into frame, and he's like, "Sam breaks up with you."
It's not you, it's Sam.
It's not you, it's Sam.
But so I'm looking. I just pulled some up. So Lindsay Lohan, $215. She's featured.
Stop, or you get like a 2 minute, 3 minute message from like Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool. Maybe not.
You want to specify whether she's drugged up or not when she does it?
Have to assume she is.
I think she's
not. I want my money back.
I want a message from 3 a.m. post-club dancing. Lindsay.
Yes.
That's what I want.
She's in the taxi cab.
I don't want 2 p.m. Lindsay.
No.
You're not paying for 2 p.m. Lindsay.
You have to pay a little extra to cover her drugs during that time. That's it. There's just a little bit of a premium on
there. Right. It's an investment.
Right.
An investment.
Yeah.
But you've got Snoop Dogg for $1,200. Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, yeah, that's a fucking bargain, really.
Right?
That's priceless.
Right. Anyway, there's all kinds of people on here. Roseanne's on here. John Cleese. I just thought it was a pretty... There's like a whole section from The Office TV show. I just thought it was a pretty fucking ridiculous thing.
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, I just came upon it recently. Smoke away. Our listeners won't know, but now they do. So, and it's largely...
It's marijuana. It's not cigarettes. I just want to specify.
Okay, good. No, and that's largely becoming decriminalized down here in the States, but I think Canada... You guys had a head start on that up there, right? It's been pretty well.
We're fully legalized nationally, so.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
It's a way to do it.
Do you just go to a store like a CVS and get it?
I don't even. What I do is I use a service that delivers to me. Oh. So I order online, I pay online, and it's at my door within 2 hours.
Wow.
And I can pick from like so many strains. I can get flowers, edible, like I can get whatever you want. Really good quality, really good price. And it's at my door within 2 hours. So
nice.
Spoiled. We're absolutely spoiled. And I just wish that teenage me, who used to like go and sit uncomfortably with uncomfortable people and like in uncomfortable situations to buy crap weed, to buy a little baggie and hope you didn't get ripped off. I wish she could see me now. We are living.
Jamma pants, watching Netflix. Kitties.
You're like, one day you won't have to sit and match with the dealer until they let you go.
Oh my god, it was the worst. It was the worst.
Tranquility, but still on the rugged. Like a gentle giant, a plug, token on blood. Man, I get so high, I hope I don't start babbling. Yo, we asked for traveling.
Yo, we flying through your neighborhood at hyperspeed. That's what's traveling off that hydro weed. I always keep my wings on deck, smoking live.
Yo, every day anyway, yo, I spark the lie.
I'm never hitting no coke, that's no joke. And y'all ain't no poke, neither is my veins.
The United States in general, and Republican red states specifically, don't give much of a fuck right now. They're, everything's just open.
Right.
So,
Aubrey, you walk into a grocery store and there are still people that don't wear a mask.
Okay, and it's even, there were like full mask mandates, yeah, pretty much like province wide. Like, it's just not even a thing with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's the biggest problem here is the small towns that they thought, right, that they were safe because they're like, oh, we're small town, but yeah, they're just ravaged now.
We actually have a bit of a problem with not too far outside of town here. We have a fairly substantial Mennonite community, okay, like Amish community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was like some major spreading going on there. So like specific restrictions had to be put in place on them. They were.
But they make their own masks, right? That'd be awesome.
Right.
Well, they were like, church, God, like, we must gather now.
Right. Right.
Gather now, yeah.
God will protect us.
Like, they weren't recognizing the restrictions for, like, because we have gathering restrictions here, too. Like, I think maybe 10 or something. But we have different, it's fucked up here. It's not great here. Like, it's not great. But compared to the U.S., like, I shouldn't even bother to complain even a little iota, like not even a little smash.
Are your kids' schools open?
So it's weird. There's an option for fully online learning, and there's an option for, like my daughter is elementary, she's grade 6, she's full-time in-person learning. Mm-hmm. My son is high school, and it's half and half. So they do half online. So they basically just split the high school in half, and they make sure that at any given time, only half of the population of the school is in the building. Mm-hmm. So it's half online and half in person.
Okay.
There have not been a lot of outbreaks or anything at schools. They've been actually really, like, schools have been doing great here. The issues that have arisen have seemed to come up from private gatherings. People getting together for like our Thanksgiving, which was back in October, the Canadian Thanksgiving, we saw a spike after that. So like, we see the spike in the private gatherings. So we'll probably see another spike after Christmas.
Yeah. Well, that's,
is Canadian Thanksgiving like ours?
It's pretty much the same thing. It's like, hey, we came over and we decimated the Aboriginal populations and let's celebrate that. So we do. And we have turkey and all the chickens. Yeah. But we do it in October so that it's like in our fall, right? And not too tied up in Christmas. You guys do it too close to Christmas.
I agree.
That's true. Yeah, because anything like toward the end of November on, it's just
like fall harvest kind of like vibe, right?
Yeah,
you're absolutely
that's the
right.
Vibe of it. Like your cornucopia of plenty, like fall harvest celebration, right? It's right. Meant to like replace the like primitive religious celebrations of like fall harvest, right?
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm gonna talk to someone about this and see if we can't change it. I really feel like it should be in October. There's probably something I can email. I could talk to someone's manager.
Yeah.
And I'm sure.
I think you're going to get nowhere because you guys have your whole Black Friday thing, right? And I think that's your holiday.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Your holiday is not even Thanksgiving. It's about those sales, baby.
That's true.
It's like all we hear about over here. Like, that's what comes across our airwaves.
That's, you know what? That's all we hear about down here, too.
Thanksgiving and Black Friday!
You're right. It's so aggressive.
That's true.
You're right.
It's starting to permeate our culture here.
Having
Black Friday sales on your Black Friday.
Oh.
We don't have Thanksgiving at your time, but we have your Black Friday. It's very weird.
On behalf of the United States, I apologize. For that leaking over.
We're going to fix this.
We're going to work on it, yeah. Yeah. As the president of Tight Rhymes.
That's intense consumerism.
Yeah.
I'm a Prime, like an Amazon Prime member, and I never participate in like the Prime Day, like, extravaganza sale, like all of that is too much for me, and I'm just like, no, I need to buy my things that I need to get when I need to get them, and I can't be sucked up in it. It stresses me the fuck out. Too much.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Amazon? I think it's called Smile. Amazon Smile.
Oh, like so that you can sign in a certain way for the charities.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's. Okay. You know, and I know everybody, you try to buy local when you can, but Amazon is just so goddamn pervasive. To any listeners or anyone who may not be aware, Amazon Smile is a nice way to where you can put in a nonprofit or a charity, and a percentage of whatever you buy goes to that nonprofit.
Right. So. Yeah. I think it's like smile.amazon?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something. Amazon Smile. But.
I am all for charity. I am all for all of it. All the time. Well, I'm the sucker. Like, I go to the liquor store to buy a few bottles of wine, and every time I go, I donate $5 to whatever their charity of the day is that they're asking for donations for.
Right.
Yeah. It's, and then on top of that, it's my big thing. I think that everybody should always, 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 you know what? Like, it's the only money I never regret.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and that goes for, like, even not just charities and not just things I can claim on my taxes, but, like, the little day-to-day things. Like, a week ago, I was at the local market that's, so thankfully, in my neighborhood, like, it's amazing. I go every Saturday morning and I get to walk around the block to our local farmers market, and then a bakery that's across the street that I get my bread from. And well in line, because now the bakery is only serving people from the door, so it's literally like a lineup outside for people waiting to buy fresh bread.
Right.
It's really cute, really cute. But I was standing in this line outside for the bakery, and I saw what I assumed to be a homeless man who was picking up cigarette butts from the sidewalk. And there was a convenience store, like, right there. So I just handed the guy a 20, and I was like, here, like, go get yourself a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, balloons bought this.
Pardon?
Like, balloons paid for this.
No, but it made his day. He like immediately went and got a pack of cigarettes, and I watched him light up that smoke, and it was like the first time in a while he got to light up a real smoke, not right. a cigarette butt that he collected from the street, right. but like a full smoke, and like the look on his face was so fucking satisfied. And like, yeah, those cigarettes aren't fucking good for him.
Right.
This is not gonna better his life in the long run. This is not gonna like change anything. But $20 just gave him like a happy minute right there and a little bit of dignity for the day.
Right.
He's wandering around picking up some cigarette butts. Yeah. And like, what was I going to spend that 20 on? Bullshit. I can tell you that much. Whatever it was going to be bullshit.
It would have been more wine, right?
So, like, literally, I'm not going to regret that 20 ever. Right. I'm going to regret, like, anytime I buy anything for myself, I end up regretting it. I don't know what it is.
Right.
But anytime I ever give to charity or spend money on, like, independent artists or friends on Twitter who have promotional stuff or things like that, I love that. Like, yeah. Let me subscribe to your Patreon. Let me fucking do your fan house. Let me buy your merchandise, whatever it is, whatever supports you in your creative endeavors. That's just like, that's just always money well spent. You cannot regret that shit, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. So.
Well, especially with like, you know, the homeless community or people, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, they'll spend it on drugs or cigarettes or alcohol. And it's like, who gives a shit? Like, who cares if, you know, if it gives. If it gives them a little bit of satisfaction. And I feel like there's so much, and especially here in the States, I don't know, I imagine there are similar factions in Canada, but, you know, people spend so much time worrying about, like, people who are at the same level as them as far as workers or, you know, poor people, lower middle class people, like, oh, what if they take advantage? Oh, what if they get something they didn't earn or what they didn't work for? Or, and that's so much the concern. And it's like, meanwhile, there are people making billions and billions and billions of dollars on the backs of...
And then using loopholes and offshore tax havens
right.
and, like, evading the taxation system
right.
to the tune of, like, significant amounts of money. And then they spend money to investigate welfare recipients to make sure that they're not, like... frauding the system only to find out that they're not, and
right.
they just wasted, like, which is literally what happened in Canada.
No, that happened down here too. That exact same thing happened.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's gonna happen everywhere.
Right.
You know what? You don't need to give a fuck about whether somebody is gaming the system for more food stamps
right.
or $100 a month or whatever the fuck it is. Like, let it go. If there's
right.
a little bit of fraud, what the fuck ever? It costs the system nothing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have, like, huge, huge, huge gouges on the system from rich billionaires and corporations, and it's fucking ridiculous.
Right.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's the same in Canada. It's corrupt, and it's... You know, politicians are paid for. So in Canada, we're definitely left of the States. So our right wing is probably moderate American or even somewhat left American. You guys are kind of more 50-50. Like, it's like Democratic, Republican. And then Canada is a little bit more divided. So there's a little bit more... split in the vote on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the conservatives and then you have the liberals, and those are the two main parties who generally trade back and forth for power the same way that Republicans and Democrats do in the States. But we also have the New Democratic Party, the NDP, and they do take up a significant portion of the vote and a significant say in Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Here, and then we also have other factions like a party that's like the Bloc Québécois, and then the Green Party, which is a very like environmental focused party. But they do
Are you down to start a riot? Are you down to start a war? We're some angry black men and we kicking down your door. Are you down to start a riot? Are you down to start a war? We're some angry black men and we kicking down your door. Ha! I'm back for more, act of war. I've been spitting these raps till my back is sore. Back and forth, pass the torch. Yeah, nigga, I'm the goat like a motherfucking Capricorn. Hey, I'm too turned up like the fucking volume. Angry black man, we a fucking problem. If you got an issue, we can fucking solve them. Ain't nobody else that can fucking stop them.
Are you down to start a riot? Are you down to start a war? We some angry black men and we kicking down your door. Are you down to start a riot?
But the ridiculous thing is you have all these like attorney generals and you know, Republicans in the Senate and the Congress like signing on to this wild notion that there was this widespread fraud and cheating and all that. And there's virtually no evidence. Like they've really presented no evidence. There's a video.
All of their court cases are like complete embarrassment.
Right.
It's judges, even Republican conservative judges that are like, but do you have any evidence? And let me remind you, I'm asking you as a member of the bar, do you have any evidence?
Right.
And the lawyers are like, no, we have nothing.
No, yeah. when my law license is on the line. No.
My license is on the line.
Yeah,
I
no.
I have to say no.
Yeah.
I have nothing. This is grandstanding.
Yeah.
But it's still achieving a purpose, I think. You know, they are sowing so much seeds of just, there's so many ignorant people in your country who aren't getting anything but news from Fox to Breitbart to whatever, you know. They're not, they have nothing beyond what they're being fed through that, right? And this dissent that's being sowed, this distrust in the system, that's gonna echo through other future elections. Like, it's so problematic in so many ways. And the fact that there's so many Republicans in Congress, in the Senate, like, how are people not fucking decrying this? Like, it's so blatant that they are either compromised or bought and sold and, you know, packaged under the tree. Like, it's so fucked up.
Right.
I'm doing
no. Well, and you know, I think a lot of it is like taking, like, accepting ignorance as a virtue. You know what I mean? And it's one thing, because I think a healthy distrust of media is a good thing. Like a healthy what's the word? Starts with an S.
It's critical thinking.
Critical thinking, yeah. And like, you don't take
assuming
any
and actually applying critical thought to what you consume.
Right. Yeah. But they've kind of taken that the other way. And instead of like, you know, approaching everything with, there's a fucking word I can't think of right now, but,
it starts with an S.
It starts with an S. It does. But
sex.
What's
sex.
That?
Sex.
Huh?
No?
Sex. Sorry. Yes. That was it. Yeah. No, but it's skepticism. Thank you. Skepticism. That's the word. But instead of approaching everything with a healthy skepticism, they've kind of, the pendulum has swung so far the other way where it's like not just being distrustful or skeptical of anything you hear, but automatically disbelieving anything that's presented to you through legitimate journalistic channels. And when nothing is objective,
anything that doesn't support what you've been fed,
right?
The ability to say, "Oh, that's fake news. They're trying to manipulate me, and I'm the woke one, and I'm awake, and I'm going to comment to all of you people that you're sheeple.
Right.
You need to open your eyes to what's really going on in the deep state."
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when truth becomes entirely subjective, like, Even if you do like support Republican conservative ideology or whatever, like, I just don't know how you can look at, like, assess that you're getting all of your news from essentially one source, the president, or people just like circle jerking him, agreeing with whatever he's saying, and looking at that and saying like, yeah, that's a reasonable way to be. Like, that must be the truth, you know, with yeah. that. I don't know. It's just wild. It's wild.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah. You can't apply reason to it. And that's what makes it so fucked up. It's like reasonable people in attempting to understand it. All we can do is like continually apply like different formulations of reason to what they're doing. And no matter what you apply, nothing is going to fit. Nothing is going to make sense.
Right.
And that's because like, they're literally like, they've subscribed to a cult fandom thing.
Right. Yeah.
Like, nothing that is not going to fit in the parameters is going to break through. Right. Like, it's just,
yeah. And I think like a very simple lesson from history is like, if at any point you believe that one single person is the only person that can save your country and save you, and they're the savior of everything, like as soon as you think that might be a thing, like there's a problem. You've stumbled into, you know,
you don't have a democracy the second that you fail to be able to criticize the leader.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you can't criticize the leader, regardless of what party they are, like, you should be criticizing the leader of your country, whether or not they're your party of choice, whether or not they're your candidate of choice. You should never, ever, ever stop criticizing
right.
your politicians and leaders. Right. That's what democracy is.
Right.
That's what it needs to be.
Well, and that's, and you know, I've said this frequently, but, you know, Obama, who had plenty of faults, but I would still say is the sure. best president we've had in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I never heard more savage, spot on criticisms of him than I did sitting in a room full of progressive liberal people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anytime you would talk, yeah. you would talk to like Republicans or conservatives, it was always like, he's a commie socialist that's gonna wipe us out, and I don't even know if he's from America. Is he from Kenya?
God damn it, he wore a tan suit, okay?
Right.
He wore a tan suit.
Yeah. His middle name is Hussein. His middle name's Hussein. I don't trust him. And that was all the criticism you got from the right. You know, but you sit with a bunch of progressives or a bunch of leftists, like, you're never going to get more substantial. And I just don't feel like that happens on the right. You know what I mean? You just don't have that, you know?
No, it's party over country.
Yeah.
And it's party over country under the guise of country over party, under the guise of extreme patriotism that is not patriotism.
Right.
It's cultism.
Yeah.
It's fascism. It's fucking weird.
Right.
It's bizarre. And what happens when you have generation after generation after generation of people who are so far removed from a proper education and a proper, like, exposure to the world at large.
Right.
Right. And then, like, also, people who, like you see it, like, it's so much, it's rural America, right? It's those forgotten people, right? The deplorables. But, like, what are they except poor people struggling?
Right.
And then taken advantage of by people who are willing to offer them a scapegoat for their struggles.
Right.
Which is so far removed from the actual institution and system causing their struggles.
Right.
And allows them to continue to prop up the system that's implementing their struggles.
Right.
It's so fucked up, and it's so weird to observe it, like, outside of it, but I empathetically kind of get there.
Yeah.
Where they're, like, taking on that, like, we need a scapegoat, right? Like, so clearly Black people are probably the reason that we're poor.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, well,
probably not the people who are voting into power.
Right, probably not the wealthy elite, the massive greed where they have like right. 80-90% of the wealth. And I mean that's
what they describe as elite though is not the wealthy, the educated, which is very telling.
Right. Yeah, not the wealthy, but the educated. Yeah. Absolutely.
Be educated. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's, and I mean, that's kind of, that's the oldest play in the, at least, you know, in the United States handbook is blame immigrants, blame other poor people, you know, keep them fighting for crumbs, you know, keep the prisoners fighting so they don't realize by, you know, how much they outnumber the guards, you know?
Right, exactly. And it's so fucking effective.
Yeah.
And history repeats and repeats and repeats because they're also in charge of what is shaping the curriculum, sorry, of the historical education that's happening, right?
Yeah.
Like, the stories that are being told are very much providing a framework upon which to, like, build those ideas.
Right.
Right? Yeah. They're not telling true history. They're right. telling whitewashed history that very much supports that continued power structure. Right. It's fucked up at every level.
Right.
And well, you need, like, huge reform across the board. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm, like, the, like, anarchist left-wing bitch you ever come across. And I'm, like, I'll say that as a Canadian. Like, I'm very left to most Canadians, and right. I don't even know what that translates to in American, except, like, die, commie, die.
Right. Yeah, no, there's no, yeah, because our, like, our left here is, like, center at best. Yeah, so. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I love it. And yeah, it's ridiculous. And that's, and it's, you know, a lot of people complain about identity politics or, like, kind of want to sweep the race thing under the rug. And I think a lot of people don't get that that's what the United States is built on. And again, and because we've never effectively addressed it, again and again, these demagogues go back to that well and use that racism and xenophobia to pit people against each other, you know? And if we don't recognize that, then you can't combat
it. And then, even more frustratingly, what I see, what I observe in your system is that within the left side, there ends up, like, the one thing that the right side really has going for it, which is terrible and horrible, but no matter what, is party over country, right?
Right.
But then on the left, they have ethics and morals and principles, and those kind of tend to create a lot of factions within the left side, right? So you see, like, the more progressive candidates like AOC, and she's just, like, completely villainized by some of the more centrist leftists in the Democratic Party, right? So it's, you see a lot of division that gets sown without the right even contributing to it.
Yeah. No, you're,
and
yeah.
That's very problematic too.
Yeah. And yeah, no, yeah, I completely agree with you. The left is too ethical to pull together because like the right, as terrible and ridiculous and, like, any angle you could take on Donald Trump, there's plenty of reasons why a self-professed Republican conservative shouldn't vote for him, whether it's a moral thing or a policy thing, or there are so many reasons conservatives should not support him, you know, but they all do.
Is they're like, oh wait, we're gonna keep these fetuses fucking alive, man, right. For the welfares.
Yeah,
we're gonna keep them alive for the welfare.
Yeah, you talk about abortion and fuck poor people and immigrants, people, they're on board. They'll all vote. They'll all band together and vote. Yeah, but on the left, like, yeah, you have more center left people who won't vote for, like, an AOC or a Bernie Sanders, you know, and then you have, you know, people who are much further left, which that's where probably I align more politically and policy wise. But a lot of those people are unwilling to vote for Biden or Hillary Clinton, or, which I get not supporting it. Like, I understand why you wouldn't say, like, yeah, I'm totally 100% behind your ideals. But when your options are Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, like,
Vote them in, and then criticize the fuck out of them after.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Pull them to the left. Vote, you know, far left in the primaries, but you don't, yeah, the general election, you don't fucking toss it to the fascists, you know?
Right.
well, we're about at time. Is there anything, Brent, anything you want to talk about before we go, or Aubrey, anything else you want to plug or mention before we sign off here?
I don't think there's anything else I want to plug now.
No.
I had like a funny thing happen to me a couple of years ago.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So, I'm a teacher, right? And I teach virtual high school math to adults. And
really?
And yeah, so
that's
when you're
so
a teacher,
surreal.
What's that?
Okay, I'm gonna like take advantage of you at some point. Mathematically speaking.
That's awesome. Brent, if you have 4 balloon animals and you add 7 balloon animals.
I have a child who is in high school, and sometimes I struggle helping him with math, is what I meant to say. In short, I said, oh, you teach math in high school, I'm going to take advantage of you. Okay.
I'm flustered.
Perfect. I love it.
Part of being a teacher, right, is that like your bosses, they have to, you have observations, right? So they know that you're not like teaching them how to play like frisbee golf or something like that. There, I'm teaching math, and so like it's on Zoom and everyone is. Their mics are off, their cameras are off or whatever. And so I'm teaching my class or whatever, and part of to get more points for me, because I have to get points, I have to get them to talk, right, my students. And so I pose a question, and this girl chimes in, and mic comes on, video comes on, but there's this music happening, and it sounds, I don't know if you've seen like Western movies, but like
yeah.
The cowboy goes into the saloon, and there's like, and there's the piano playing.
Yeah,
it was that piano music.
Like,
like
The Entertainer.
And so I was like very thrown off. And when that shit happens, my brain wants to riff. And I want to quip, and I want to make jokes like immediately. It's a visceral. I can't help myself. So it's a struggle between like, do I say funny shit during my observation? Like both of my bosses are in my Zoom, and so I was just like, "What are you in an old timey saloon?" You know, it's like a joke. My bosses, by the way, no camera, no audio, so they're like they're dead to me, right?
Right.
And so she's like, ha, no, that's just my baby's mobile. Like the mobile sounds just like, it was like, don't riff. And I was like, did I hear a spittoon go off over there? And so, and that satiated my urge, right? Just enough. And so when you've been in comedy enough, you can stop the smile. You can just shut it off because like, you look cooler if you don't laugh at your own
don't
shit.
Break, yeah.
Right.
So, like, I've honed it, right? And so, like, my mouth stopped making the smile. I was like, whoop. And at that moment, the lead teacher, my boss, turned his camera on to show me he was doubled over in laughter. And so then it was just like, oh,
got him.
It was a twist that I've never experienced before in, like,
that's
comedy.
You know,
like,
that's awesome.
Again. That is a huge win.
That's hilarious. Nice.
If the question is ever, do I share myself being human and being humorous?
Yeah.
Answer should always be yes.
Right.
I can't think of a single situation. Well, maybe I can, but fuck those situations. Don't be in them. Okay.
Right.
Yes, most situations showing humanity. And connection, like how do you connect with people? If you're laughing with somebody, that's a fucking bond. That's an instant connection. If you can connect with your students by laughing with them, you're connecting with your students. You're engaging with your students. That's a win.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. And you
that's how I do my parenting. That's how I do my hookering. Like that's
yeah.
You have to connect with people.
Bring the humanity. That's well, Brent, you should have followed it up with, you should have been like, I crack myself. I crack myself. Yeah.
You can just imagine what was going on in my head. Just like two people, two old cowboys, like, up at a bar, like, right. Hey, man, let me ask you about this equation.
Yeah, this town ain't big enough.
Fucking variable. One second, barkeep, you know, it's just like, and it was, my head was in cartoon world. I was right. In cartoon world, and I forced myself out of it because my job was on the line.
Nice. Yeah. What do you get when you subtract one of us from this town? Because it ain't big enough for the both of us. Nice. All right. Well, I don't want to keep you any later than you know, we mentioned getting, you know, keeping it to 60 to 90 minutes. So it's been an absolute pleasure, Aubrey. You know, talking to you and
I've enjoyed myself a lot. Yeah. Actually, yeah. I'm sad that it's over.
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry. Well, what have you?
Don't leave me.
Was it what you expected, Aubrey?
I mean, yeah, pretty much. This is not my first podcast interview. I've done a couple others, actually.
Nice.
So, yeah. You didn't pop my cherry. I'm sorry. My cherry was pretty soft. That's why you got the discount, though. So, I don't know why you're complaining.
No, that's okay? Right. It was better.
Invoice that discount line. So really, concerning at this point is kind of.
No, it's better that way. This is great. It's great. So, all right. Well, you guys, you take care, and this has been Danger Explosion.